Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the AEW Dynamite Preview. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dudley Boys of What Culture, Michael Hanford and Michael Sidgwick, here to look ahead to tonight's episode of AEW Dynamite. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts, where we not only review AEW Dynamite, but also Rampage, baby, Raw, SmackDown, NXT, Super, premium live events, pay-per-views, we have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a round of the week complete with a bloody quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, they're joined by Hamlet and Sidgwick, which look ahead to Dynamite tonight. Gents, this is the Double or Nothing Go Home show. It is in less than
90s.
How are you feeling about tonight's show, Sidge?
Well, on paper, it looks very good. And they know what they're doing. They will have had some kind of angle in mind. That's Tony Khan. The wrestlers would have had their absolute best sort of line delivery or threat or whatever, all in the locker for tonight. And then the worst AEW sexuals, yeah, I'm going there, are going to say something like, thought it fell off. And it kind of has a bit throughout this build, which makes me a little bit, I'm still on a macro level, pretty concerned about the direction of the company, how difficult it is to book around such an absolutely mammoth roster. But I suspect tonight will be great. I don't necessarily think it's going to, quote, save AEW. We could go into a big philosophical debate about whether the actual promotion needs saving at this point. What I'm trying to arrive at in my traditional long-winded way is tonight should be great, but I'm still concerned about certain things in the company. And I've been trying to nail it down on Twitter. The mega fans will forgive me. Ultimately, the roster's too big to book around. I've used the Spotify premium analogy before where it just feels like it's like the Netflix sea of thumbnails. All of this is great, yeah, but if you got rid of some of them, the rest would look better by comparison. There's too much choice. Everything's sensory overload. I'm spoiled, basically. It's a good thing. It's better than the Fed, but I've been spoiled. Ultimately, my key issue with AEW Dynamite, I think the biggest one that isn't the massive roster, is the pacing. Every which way is completely wrong. He needs to rewatch the pressure bandage from Mid-South to realize how to pace a TV show. Because Dynamite is at once completely rushed to the point where very little or not enough registers is something that on its own, sold adequately, would be so much more effective.
Yeah.
It's either completely rushed and every storyline takes ages to get going or takes ages to conclude. It's like, how do these two things like gel, and increasingly I'm finding that they don't.
Yeah, I think the speed and pace of these Dynamites is something that if you really love a storyline, you get quite frustrated with the speed and pace. And the example you always use is Christopher Daniels and the end of SCU. Like how quickly it was impact level, how they breezed past something that should have been given more time to breathe.
Thanks, guy. Anyway.
Like, well, that's the last we'll ever see of Christopher Daniels in a squared circle. But anyway, the Young Bucks are here now.
The speed at which the good stuff passes is frustrating because you want it given time to breathe. The speed at which bad stuff passes or angles that you're just not interested in is almost using the speed to its advantage because it's like, well, it was this rubbish 30-second interruption promo, but at least it was only 30 seconds, then on to the next thing. So that kind of
piles up, though, doesn't it?
Oh, massively so. It takes one and it gives with the other because it kind of obscures some stories that are maybe not as strong as they should be or as strong as we would expect from AEW. But the reality is, if the Dynamites are going through so quickly, nothing stand a chance. So you start then, the Daniels SCU thing being an example, right? it wasn't built massively well on Dynamite, but they'd put a lot of work into it on being the elite, and there was a lot of heft in the lore of AEW with the Young Bucks and SCU. So, like, a lot of it was implied, more than it should have been, but at very least there was investment on the night, I would say. I think the rushed nature of so many of these Dynamites as late has meant that the, even if you've wanted to invest, which I don't think has been the case, I think, oh, I agree with Sidgwick, a lot of it has felt like, oh, am I really that fussed about a lot of this? They've kind of not really given you the time to anyway. So even if there's something you were itching for more of, it's like, on to the next, on to the next, on to the next, and you can't. In this case, I actually sort of think that's benefited AEW, because I just don't think a lot of these stories are strong. I said this a few weeks ago, I'm probably more invested in Punk Hangman Page than the majority. If everyone's being totally honest with themselves, I think I'm higher on that than most people. Supremely invested in MJF Wardlow, because that's clearly the main event in everything but name alone coming into this pay-per-view. And everything else, it's just not, I don't think these are the finest exhibitions of Tony Khan's ability to pair people, to create stories around pairings that you want to pay money to see, the television ones along the way. And my personal problem, looking at this Dynamite card, because on paper it is quite a quality show, and something like, I'd say FTR versus Roppongi Vice is probably the best example of the spoiled wrestling fan mentality of being like, this is pretty amazing. Like, FTR are in AEW as the Ring of Honor World Champions fighting a New Japan team on the precipice of Forbidden Door. Once upon a time, we would have glamorized Taz, the WWE's Taz, going to ECW to take the belt off WCW's Mike Awesome. These sort of, like, things which could not happen. Now they happen all the time and they've been normalized. What's worse is that the result isn't in doubt. Like, not to trample on our own toes as we're about to preview, but because the result isn't in doubt, that magic is lost because there's no sense of unpredictability. The Taz Mike Awesome situation had all this unpredictability. What the hell is going on? We look at that, and as good as it might be, you know exactly what the hell is going on. The Owen tournament hasn't been that well booked and that well presented. Thus, though the results are unpredictable, I'm just not terribly excited about the stakes. So with everything that might on paper be quite good, there's sort of a caveat or a qualifier or a reason to just go, but, and I just think that in itself is a long way down from where Dynamite's peak was. Mm. Aside from a lot of the very relevant issues around pacing and creative and things like that, it's just established a few too many norms that I think are lowering the expectation. As a result, this may be a banger of an episode tonight. Mm. Like, going in with measured or lowered expectations might genuinely assist this. Just one quick thing, and then I know we'll go into it on the more granular level. I saw the graphic for this, and those graphics do a great job of making this feel like an unbelievable, epic 2 hours. You cannot believe that this is for free on television when a company will be proud of this on a pay-per-view. What was telling for me was the MJF Spears Wardlow graphic was like in the bottom corner instead of splashed across the top. And my perception was, that's the biggest and best thing on the show.
Yeah.
And they're looking at it as like, it's another all snap in Dynamite. And it's like, it's not though. Like, if you were being totally honest with yourself, the biggest thing is right there in that corner. Mm-hmm. You can't call it the main event because you've got to put face off between the champions or belts on the line or tournament. You know, it's like, it's got to be one piece of the puzzle. But in reality, I think everything's sort of leaning on it a bit at the moment.
Feels like I ask you this before every AEW pay-per-view, but I'm going to ask it anyway, because we've got 10 matches right now on the pay-per-view card. One is the buy-in match with Hookhausen, of course. So 9 matches on the main card. We were talking in the office before, potentially what? 3 more matches. You've got the mixed tag, obviously. Potentially, we'll talk about what Samoa Joe might be doing if he's not involved in the Owen Hart Cup. And, MJF, that match, of course. MJF Wardlow, not official as of yet. So that would be potentially 13 matches stretched across the buy-in and the main card. Is that too many for you, or is it all depend on how it's booked on the night?
It's all dependent on how it's paced and booked. Like, I've watched WrestleMania VHS tapes. This ridiculous amount of matches, but you never get bored because it's so colourful, every character's over, and they don't really outstay their welcome on the night. Very few long matches, but the modern era generates loads of long matches. My worry is that the lack of discipline that Tony Khan has shown of late will make this feel longer than it is. No AEW pay-per-view main card has exceeded 4 hours in length.
Yeah,
I saw that. All went under. I think it was Will Washington who's tweeted that. But I really rate Will Washington as a follow and everything else. But there's a trap there. You can say,
can use bloody facts to prove anything.
Yeah. But genuinely, like,
if anything with numbers. That's yeah, the thing. That's like, find the way the numbers work for you rather than just having the numbers work.
Absolutely. Because ultimately, it's all about how long the shows feel. And we've said time and time again, and look, we'll preview Double or Nothing later on this week. So make sure to subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcast from, for that. But ultimately, it's all about the key core problem is how these shows are sequenced. And again, the fact that it's depressing to talk about and keep talking about, because that's not very good for the listeners, but it's also depressing to keep talking about because it's not very good for the fans either. Mm. They pace them like WWE shows and not New Japan shows. New Japan show, every single match is longer and has more stakes in it than the last. So there's always something to look forward to. There's nothing that has the ability to really exhaust you on the way to the main event. And the noise is like the exponential growth chart that mm-hmm. we're all pretty sick of seeing, but luckily they don't get reported anymore very much, so it doesn't really matter. Where just audience investment just goes up and up and up and up and up. And it's like a wave form in AEW mm. and WWE because of the way the shows are sequenced in such a way that halfway through, you're kind of just waiting to get to the good bits again. And it's a sequencing, not a length issue. And I suspect this is definitely going to be the case at Double or Nothing unless Tony Khan changes the habit of 3 years that he's cultivated, and the fact that it's taken 3 years means probably not.
I think just on that again, it's the fact versus feeling element of these cards. What I will say, and I've been on here complaining about how long some of these pay-per-views have felt at times, but I will say in defense of those long shows is that, like, on the road to the pay-per-views, your feeling is that every single match, these pay-per-views are premium, it's 4 a year, and every single wrestler and match are worthy of their premium place on the card. This is the first time where I can categorically say that it feels like a number of matches is to get wrestlers on rather than them having earned their place with premium Matt content. I mean, he's a big offender to be fair, but like you know, several of the matches feel like, yeah, cool, I want to see that person in a pay-per-view match, but did it have to be this time? Could it not have been at the next one? Are they really in a story that is worthy of a premium? You know, as we'll go through the preview of the pay-per-view later in the week, and we'll probably be able to drill into the examples, but across the card, there's elements where they're on here because it's every pay-per-view is AEW's version of WrestleMania, get them a payday. And I've never been somebody to complain too loudly about roster bloat, but that is where roster bloat becomes an issue. If you're finding a way for people to get onto the card rather than just rewarding their premium work with a premium slot, then you're just not producing a premium product.
So as I mentioned, it's the go-home show before Double or Nothing, and there is a face-to-face set between the AEW World Champion Hangman Page and CM Punk. Very unpredictable, this match on the pay-per-view to call. I think some people now, maybe in the last few weeks, have started leaning maybe Punk's way, but how do they present this tonight? Because you've mentioned before, Hamflet, that they've, you know, given themselves lots of threads and avenues to potentially go down, and maybe haven't gone down as many as you'd like.
I love this in theory, if it is going to be how I imagine it will be, which is Jim Ross sitting down with them in a pre-tape segment. Is it definitely going in ring?
I would say so.
Like, every time they've done that, it's delivered, right? You get these little, it's obviously they can cut it and they make it look nice. Jim Ross has this, like, when he's in that environment, the authority of kind of pro wrestling. We've seen it with Hangman Page as well. He's like revealed so much with like a micro expression when he was teaming with Kenny Omega and things like that. And AEW in general has done a great job of being able to ratchet the tension up in a room where people can't really swing for one another. It's why the device is potentially its own spire. It's why people still revisit Austin and Rock as one of WWE's like real sports feel build between the two big stars. I would love them to do this because I think one of the most effective elements of this, and this can be done in ring, to be fair, but what would be most effective about it being taped, because they could get the lines right, would be Jim Ross exploring the biggest missing detail, which is what the hell happened in those 7 days that made Hangman Page so angry with CM Punk. Like, it remains, there's a few loose threads, as we pointed out, but between Punk getting his shot, which he'd earned in the rankings on a week where Page just happened to not be there for COVID, which was revealed, it wasn't some sort of, you know, he's out and about. 7 days later, Paige is absolutely raging at a guy that has been very sportsmanlike and is how much he's looking forward to it. That detail would be nice to pick up on, because already they're now too frosty with one another to be able to have that dignified conversation. This would put them in the place where they have to. I would love, I've not needed, and I understand exactly why people have done this. I would have done this myself. When Punk was going to be signed and Paige is the drinker and Punk's the straight edge, that was infinitely more intriguing before AEW made you realise that this is a new world and John Moxley's just come out of treatment and in fact don't trivialise it.
Mm-hmm.
And then went and trivialised it in a promo last week. But like that really changed my perspective on how you use this straight edge versus drinker character, because Paige didn't get the beer out immediately, did he, when he won the title? He went to his friends first and that felt powerful as well. But I guess you could talk about that. Maybe not so much about drinking, but about gambling. CM Punk saying I wasn't a gambling man. Hangman Page saying I'm a gambling man. There exists there this idea that maybe CM Punk still is a bit pious underneath it. And maybe Hangman Page does just want to be a cowboy, you know, above all else, rather than a leader. I think, like, I've yet to see CM Punk really unpick Hangman Page's fragile psyche. I remember Murray after the Page, Bret Hart masturbatory promos, I'm going to kill CM Punk, all this sort of thing. He was the one that identified what he thought was Page exhibiting a bit of self-doubt in his face as he left the ring. AEW haven't presented that. So was that just a bit of accidental acting from Page and a good spot by Murray, or a complete accident? I think they can do something with that. Punk's a genius at being able to remain on the surface, 100% babyface, while secretly trying to needle a little bit. He's paid a lot of tributes to Bret Hart. Who else does CM Punk love? Steve Austin. Steve Austin told you what he was going to do in that sit-down with The Rock before WrestleMania, and none of us spotted it until it happened. CM Punk could do something along those lines here to, if not win, show what depths he's prepared to sink to try and get it done.
I would much prefer a candid sit-down pre-tape, but that's not what draws ratings, and this needs to draw a number because it needs to draw a pay-per-view number. So I expect this to unfold in the ring. And they've broken the seal on, we could trivialize alcoholism for heat again or something like that last week. So maybe they'll do something with it. Maybe CM Punk himself wants to give in modern and necessary conversations that have come to light. Maybe he doesn't want to lean into that aspect of his character anymore. And the best thing about CM Punk is that he's such a genius that he doesn't have to. They still might play with it to the point where it's not so much that CM Punk is negging Hangman Page and saying, well, you drink to escape your problems. I don't have any problems. This is how good I am at the moment. They could do something with it, even if it's maintaining that not exactly well-explained thread where Hangman Page has got little respect for CM Punk, but he could sort of halfway through Punk's portion of this face-to-face could just open his jacket, get a can of beer, pop it open.
A hip flask, maybe.
Or a hip flask. Punk can kind of do an awry expression as if to say, no, I'm better than you and I'm better than this, to talk about this. And then Page could just gulp it down, spray it in his face.
Yeah.
And then they could do something like that. So it's not necessarily saying Page drinks and that's therefore bad, I'm pious, and everyone who drinks is bad, because that would completely go against the wonderful message he had for John Moxley the day that the Dynamite after it was revealed that he was going into an inpatient alcohol treatment program.
He's got a can in his hand and the belt over his shoulder, and Punk's like, look, Paige, you do you, but I don't need that. I need that. And he's pointing at the belt rather than the beer or something.
Or even if
imply that he needs it a little bit and just...
If you have Paige fire back there, he could pull out the hip flask and be a bit shaky, like, oh, bloody hell, I need a drink here. And then you do the swig in it, spits it in his face. He's like, I don't need this either, brother.
Yeah.
Even if it's something, even if it's nothing suggested that CM Punk has an issue with Paige's drinking, or Paige's drinking in itself is an issue, because they have sensibly abandoned that aspect of the Paige arc following the Moxie news. What if it's just something to piss CM Punk off and wipe the grin off his face?
Mm.
Because Punk's going into this very confident. The whole thing is, so this is why I kind of don't like the program. I'm rent-free. They're going to do something amazing with the GTS and or the Buckshot, right? I don't know what it is yet. They do. Discuss it on the preview. But for tonight, no indication that he's an alcoholic and that's bad, or he's an alcoholic and that's trivial, or CM Punk hates him. Maybe Hangman Page just wants to wipe the smirk off his face and realize, oh, you're not in my head. I'm going to piss you off this time and just spray beer in his face. I don't know. The fact that I'm maybe talking about this a lot means that they haven't got enough ideas, and I don't want to project ideas onto them. I want them to make me luxuriate in the story.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites.
So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Let's talk about the Owen Hart Cup. Two semi-finals tonight. The winner of the men's obviously goes through to face Adam Cole in the final. The women's would go through to face the winner of Ruby Soho versus Chris Statlander, which goes down on a Rampage this week. So, Sid, who are you backing? Samoa Joe versus Kyle O'Reilly and Britt Baker versus Toni Storm.
Look, the way that this company books is that they show their hand quite often and quite clearly the fact that they've been feuding for what feels like 8 years at this point. Jay Lethal and Samoa Joe are going to have a match. Don't even do it for the undercard. I'm sure it'll get a reaction. We are the low guys on Jay Lethal in general. His stuff kind of always gets a reaction in the arena. His matches get a reaction. That should be the caveat. But for the sake, I wouldn't add a red hot match to Double or Nothing at this point, much less one that's fans are pretty into and they've built it. Just don't. Save it for the Dynamite after.
Yeah.
They've done this with the TNT title before. Like they always announce something at Double or Nothing that's big. And theoretically, Joe versus Lethal's big because they've built it. Which leads me to believe because Joe's got something to do after this and Kyle O'Reilly doesn't, it's going to be Cool Kyle versus Adam Cole.
Mm.
Why? I don't understand why they're doing that when everyone kind of laughed last year at the excess of it in NXT. There's no appetite to watch them wrestle ever again. Now, take the NXT away from Cole and Kyle O'Reilly, and their first interactions and team were so good that that's how they got to NXT in the first place. They didn't rely on NXT. NXT imposed certain NXT things on them to the detriment of their auras and the storyline. So it doesn't have to be bad just because it was bad in NXT, but at the same time, it's still, you just did it. Yeah. Don't need to say this again. And again, this feels very much like Adam Cole needs to be on the paper. How?
Yeah.
And this is how.
Road 2, excellent this week. Well worth a watch on AEW's YouTube channel. But in it, Michael Hanford, I'm not sure if you've seen this before, Kyle O'Reilly promises, in Owen Hart's own words, to kick the leg out of Samoa Joe's leg. And it's a glimpse of the old Kyle, isn't it?
It's very good. In addition to the Rampage thing, which makes me think that Cool Kyle's coming back. So I think Kyle wins. Hopefully not through interference. Don't do that in a semi-final. Post-match beatdown, of course. I'd expect a post-match beatdown at AEW. But Kyle versus Adam Cole is the more likely, I think. And I think they'll go with Baker, Ruby Soho. There's something about Britt Baker's, Schrodinger's long-term Britt Baker storylines, where it's like, she deals exclusively in Schrodinger's storylines long-term. The Thunder Rosa thing was so convenient, where, I'm not actually going to do anything here. And then when it arrives, you're in the making this, lads. Well, was it?
Because
it just happened a year ago, and it was always going to go to this, but you just took your sweet time and ruined a lot of the heft. Baker versus Hayter. Is that happening or not? Do you hate each other because you kind of just got back together after teasing friction? They will revisit it at some point, but it's not really a consistent thread. And the third Schrodinger's long-term Dr. Britt Baker storyline is Dr. Britt Baker versus Ruby Soho. Ruby Soho came in, Britt Baker beat her. Ruby Soho's arc is the Nelly woman. She just got beat off Baker at Grand Slam. She got to the finals of the TBS title tournament. Yeah. She's had various interactions with Baker where Baker every now and then reminds her, your disappointment since you came in, only by defeating me will you get rid of this reputation as a disappointment. So I expect that is the direction. I've sold my stock in Ruby Soho, and judging by the silence in arenas, a lot of people have as well. I would just go with Toni Storm and reverse plans, but they have been building this when they want and when they fancy it, and they will pretend it's bigger than it is, but I think it'll be Baker versus Soho. What's the match tonight, Baker Storm?
Yes.
I've got high expectations for this. Yes. I really do.
Should have been the final.
Probably should have been the final, yeah.
Like, I cannot believe we've arrived at a TV semi-final between Baker and Toni Storm in the final. I think tournaments have gone wrong. Like, the Owen Hart, the first inaugural Owen Hart tournaments should have been, sentimental in the extreme, right? There are times to lean into sentiment, and this was absolutely that. How are we pitching finals where an AEW was showing us this, the men's final, two heels, right, that are mates, where one of them's kind of jovially threatening to finger poke a doom it, right? First ever Owen Hart. Like, for all the I think the reasoned critique of some of the Bret Hart tributes, like, the FTR match was very much in the spirit of what we all wanted to feel for this tournament, you know? How have we not had the clear babyface on this side and the clear heel on this side, and they're on a collision course, and it's going to be on, and then we're just all going to rally around the babyface doing it to be the first one with the name on the trophy. Similarly, in Britt Baker and Toni Storm, the match that promises the most quality, that makes the best use of Toni Storm having debuted and then kind of disappeared off television to this backstage area for ages, of Britt Baker, who can retain her star quality without being able to really fight for a belt at the moment. And again, a case of a heel and a baby face. I think they've really blown. I'm looking forward to this match on Dynamite, but I think it speaks to several, like, confusing. I don't believe in misfires. I think this company plots and plans, but I can't see how we've arrived at this point of the semis. Like, Joe winning would at least get us a baby face in the final for Joe versus Adam Cole. And I guess that's kind of, it's pay-per-view worthy 12 months ago. Like, the Forbidden Door has flung open, and it's not just extended to Impact on New Japan. It's extended to loads of XWE guys, of NXT guys, more specifically, the class of 2019 that you're getting to see all these, like, Wednesday Night War dream matches. But they've all been diluted to the extent we're not dream matches. So Joe versus Adam Cole 12 months ago is interesting. Now, less so, you know? But, like, I feel like Toni Storm and Britt Baker's exemplified that for me, because it would have felt pay-per-view quality. I think it were, like, so much more than, because I think Sidge is right. Britt Baker, Ruby Soho feels like the match, right? But is Soho, like, the heroic figure? Probably not. The heel that's got the call and response chant in both matches might win. They're like, Adam Cole and Britt Baker, the heel couple, and inaugural winners of the Owen. Cool. Like, their characters are not where they need to be particularly. It's just, like, the get Adam Cole on the pay-per-view philosophy might now be, now I think about it, as I'm talking this from the existence, might extend to the entire purpose of the Owen Hart tournament. Give you two big stars that can't fight for titles at the moment, belts. Give them different belts. Give them pink ones, you know, and, like, it's just, oh, I don't know. Like, it's put me off even, like, getting excited about this, because it's TV and Dynamite's oddly paced. And if anything, a pay-per-view length would have ensured that Britt Baker and Toni Storm would have the match we expect they can have, whereas something might run long, or they might not be allocated more than six to begin with, or whatever, you know.
An ad break through the middle.
Yeah, almost definitely.
I'm going to go Kyle O'Reilly, because I think that's going to happen. And the other one is a complete coin flip, but I'm going to go Toni Storm, because that's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see her in the final, preferably actually against Chris Statlander, although I don't know how that dynamic would work, but I like both of those two women.
Probably a little bit better than the hater match, to be honest, because I think Statlander's a bit further along.
Certainly a contender for match of the night tonight is the three-way between Jungle Boy, Ricky Starks, and Swerve Strickland. I have one question for you here, Hamlet. Jungle Boy's getting pinned, isn't he?
Yeah, it's... Do I like this or not?
I do. Christian looking disappointed and concerned before the papers. Yeah.
I kind of can't be arsed with the match, if I'm honest. But if for nothing else, I do like that they've had Jungle Boy get beat so much and they've found a way to make it make sense. It's really hard to do this kind of thing within the rankings. And it's good that it's hard to do this thing, because WWE can't book losing streaks, because you shouldn't really book losing streaks to such an extent. You know, it takes some real flair to make one work. And they've kind of done that with Jungle Boy, because he's had this tag belt, so you've not been thinking about his singles rankings because he's holding a belt in another division. So it's an inspired way for Jungle Boy to lose on the run-up for you to Well, no, it's not true. I was going to say, for you to believe that this team might stand a chance, let's just say Swerve, right? Swerve pins Jungle Boy. Wow, now that really gives Swerve and Lee momentum. It doesn't, does it? Because Sean Spears beating Big Damo didn't give him momentum going into the match with Wardlow. That's patronising WWE brain. That's us being like, well, this is what they're telling us to think, so this is what I think, even though I don't actually think it. So, no, I think this match is fine, but I feel I'm out for it. There we go. There's my summary.
Action-wise, it should be tremendous. Absolutely tremendous. But it's the best cheeky version of something that you shouldn't do. You shouldn't book anyone who's competing in a title match to lose on the eve of the pay-per-view. It just is senseless booking. Momentum means literally nothing. And even if it does actually mean something, right? If you're a Premier League team and or you're like whatever, and you beat someone midweek, and you're thinking, right, okay, we're in form. Like, we are in form. It's a real sporting value, a real sporting principle. Like, if Newcastle play three matches, right, and two of them are against opponents you're expected to win at home, and you then beat them at home, and you've got, like, a pretty tricky away fixture, you do think they've got the momentum, mm-hmm. the confidence to go and win the third match. But WWE's bastardized it so much that I can never take it seriously in the wrestling context. Now, is that fair?
It's the age-old tradition, isn't it? Like, oh, they stood tall holding the belt on the go-home, so they ain't winning.
Yeah, they've completely bastardized it, right? But is it fair, therefore, to perceive AEW's...
Tar them with the same brush.
Tar them with the same brush. Yes. Because if they are insistent that we don't do what WWE does, except when we do it, but a bit better, it's like... I don't know. They should probably know that not to tell the storyline. There's elements of this I really like. The top five ranking stuff. The idea that there's a separate designation between being a singles wrestler and a tag team specialist. Again, it's a sporting thing. You can have like teams that are great in cups, that just got loads of balls about them, but not much quality to go throughout the league. But there's a sporting principle applied loosely to this three-way. But I'm kind of talking myself into enjoying it more than I am. Mm. And those days are over for me as an AEW critic because they've earned it to a point, but if they have lost it for a little bit, as they have over 2022, I'm going to expect way more from them.
I'm blindly optimistic about this, and I think it's because of all the fantasy booking I've done in my head. So when that doesn't happen, I apologise. I'm going to be disappointed either tomorrow or, well, with you about 6 a.m. on Monday morning.
Got any physical impossibilities for this?
No, not physical impossibilities. A few things that I wanted to mention here. Like you say, momentum doesn't mean anything. I mean, Halifax Town had gone 10 games unbeaten until last night when we beat them 2-1 in the playoff eliminator in the National League.
You did get that look in your eyes whilst you were making a point. I was like, where's he going with this?
Why is he not listening to me?
But also, I was listening. But also, I really like the idea of Jurassic Express losing the titles at the Pape. Christian Cage turning on Jungle Boy, and I think the catalyst is here. He gets pinned, and maybe it's not even he, maybe even Luchasaurus. Maybe they're not even involved in the pinfall on Sunday, but Christian Cage is already, the seeds have been there. There is easily something that can be put on a road tour or a video package or whatever of like, there's been a switch that's gone in his head, and it's like when someone points something out and you can never unsee it. He's suddenly gone, you're the weak link in this team. And he's not, obviously, bloody Jungle Boy, he's mint. But I think tonight, Ricky Starks pins Jungle Boy. I think Swerve and Keith, spoilers, win the titles on the Pape. And that's what leads to Christian Cage betraying or turning on Jungle Boy. And little something that's not going to happen tonight, but that I would really like. Why not have the tag team partners all do commentary? So you've got Luchasaurus going, yeah. You've got, you've got Powerhouse Hobbs just being like, you know all about the, what's he says? You know all about the pile driver, baby. Is that what he said to Keith Lee, I think? And then you've got Keith Lee commentating on the triple threat.
Give me the picture of that desk. You did picture a physical impossibility after all. How big's the stage going to be just to accommodate
it's
the desk?
Bigger than Rampage's commentary team.
right, Sidge, here's something I think I can predict your answer here. Ring of Honor tag team titles on the line tonight. FTR defending against Trent and Rocky Romero, Roppongi Vice. Are the tag titles going to change hands?
No, dear, that's wrong.
No. What this is, I don't hate it. I'm going to get a good match out of it.
I do.
You hate it.
I kind of hate it.
You won't hate it. 5 minutes deep into this match.
Oh, the match itself, no.
That promo last week from them was ludicrous, wasn't it?
Exactly. Like, that's what.
Ludicrous, no credibility. FTR versus Best Friends. Remember that? That was one of the first 2020. It was all right. But I do think that Trent in particular, now that he's worked with them once, it's very physical. Low-key, very physical Trent. I think this could be an excellent match. But this, again, is very much appeasement. Like, they spend so long appeasing FTR that they're going to probably achieve Nirvana in the next 3 months and then realize, oh, this can't do anything except achieve Nirvana. It's the heightened state of being, so let's just go to WWE and get some money. He's booking FTR too nicely, if anything. This is yet more appeasement. Tony Khan's got a weird philosophy with go-homes where he doesn't spend every single segment selling the pay-per-view. And, you know, there's a logic to that.
Yeah.
But this is very much right. I can't quite squeeze FTR on the card, so let's just get them on the Dynamite in the title match, maybe the main event, just because I need to make everyone happy. But he's got too many people to make happy, and I really want to spend 2 hours anticipating this pay-per-view, and this match doesn't really function to do that. So it has to be great to be necessary, and as good as it can be, there are a few guarantees of great in this world.
Me and Sid are having a really interesting chat. We probably should just record the office, because we have such informed conversations in there, and definitely not anything that could get us in trouble. Because we were talking yesterday, I asked Sid, what's the phrase I used? Like, what's the biggest, not missed call, biggest...
The
worst take you've had with AEW, because I said, I can tell you mine right away, and that was me going... need to put the tooth and nail match on the main card. And then it happened. And I was like, ooh. And Sitch pointed out, like, when FTR arrived, we were all like, it's good this, isn't it? And now FTR, and we're like, oh, no, this is what we wanted.
I actually think I was the Bart Simpson sideshow Bob. That one little boy who got off FTR because I was the low guy in the Young Bucks match.
Murray was as well.
Right? I thought I didn't get...
I bargained for a little bit with it.
I didn't get, but I will say, they've completely swung it now. Was there, have I made this up, or has there been like a sort of, and it's cheeky because it's not real, it's not to do with this match, but have they tried to like leverage some Forbidden Door crack over this? It's like,
yes,
you beat Roppongi, then the IWGPs are coming, as if there's some sort of New Japan ranking system that Roppongi currently sit as the gatekeepers that are in the way of FTR's quest to it. Is that like, I kind of admire the grift of them trying to apply some logic to why this is occurring and why this matters to FTR. You're going to take this away from my family. Like, there, you're going to take away my lifelong dream of winning the IWG belt that I came up with last month when we won the Ring of Honor belt. It was a lifelong dream. Like, fine. A lot of FTR at the moment are fine. Like, of course, why not make the belt collectors? Why not? You know, it's quite nice, the idea of them having all the other belts but the AEW ones, and that's what brings them back to trying to get a title shot for the AEW belts. There's a pay-per-view title match in that, probably. FTR with all the rest, and, you know, Forbidden Dawn, no less. But, don't strap it to this match, because that's bollocks and you know it is.
Yeah. Right. Finally, there is a steel cage match tonight that may or may not bring us to another match on Double or Nothing. If Wardlow is victorious here, he will face MJF. He'll finally get his hands on him. Another brilliant part of the road to this whole Wardlow, Sean Spears stuff. If he beats Sean Spears, yes, he gets the match with MJF on Sunday. What happens in the steel cage match? Because this isn't just Sean Spears versus Wardlow. This is Sean Spears versus Wardlow with MJF as the special guest referee. And he said, Wardlow lays a finger on him, no match.
It's going to be interesting to see how they juggle such a toxified sports entertainment trope with the integrity they like to apply to their big match booking. So, I mean, just to throw it out there, like, I don't think they'll do it, but I think there's genuine intrigue in they're just blowing up the universe and having Sean Spears win this.
Yes.
Like, our assumption that this has got to be for the pay-per-view, and then they just do the big twist out of nowhere, and it's not happening at the pay-per-view, and then at the pay-per-view itself, you have Wardlow busting in the building, and he's more over than ever before, or something like that. I wouldn't do it personally, but I think there's enough. It's like that 99%, 1% doubt. I think they've got more than the 1% doubt out of this result, and that's enough, ultimately, because you've got MJF in there. But I can't work out if this is going to go on last and be the main event. And it's, you've got an opportunity here to have Wardlow, like, the show closes with Wardlow as the winner of the cage match, the man who's got the opportunity to win his freedom at the pay-per-view on Sunday, and the lasting image, like that kind of, I know, like, as you say, Cedric Khan doesn't necessarily do these go-home things, but the last thing you see, see you Sunday, this man out of the cage and out of the cuffs and MJF's for it, you know, all that sort of thing. It's very traditional and would totally work. But they didn't do that with their lashes. That was, you kind of feel that was going to be like mid-card fodder and Wardlow would no-sell it and it would be going a different direction to the Cody thing. And I wonder, too, if this will subvert the Cody-esque expectations of a cage match and it's safer to play it a little bit more for laughs, like MJF's comedy attempts to cheat are more just the last. You know, if they go so emotional and so, Wardlow's big moment, blah, 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 it sort of makes the result on Sunday, like, there's no doubt about which way it can go. I think if MJF and Sean Spears clown it a bit and they maybe put this on in the mid-card and it's Wardlow fundamentally just battering Sean Spears despite MJF's cartoonish ways to cheat before he either has no choice to take a fall or Sean Spears' errant swinging chair knocks MJF out like it did Vince McMahon at Over the Edge 98 and it's Wardlow with his hand on MJF's hand. One, two, three.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know it sounds really cartoonish, but I feel like that might stand as the strong. We've had so much we had the heat last week, so much serious stuff that, like, play with this being the fun inevitability rather than the serious heated Cody Wardlow cage match of a couple of years ago. You didn't do it with the lashes, so I would lean more into that than trying to get this to be this serious main event, blood on both men or however it is they want to do it, because otherwise how can MJF lose? Like, how can Sean Spears now, if they're taking this as seriously as they should be, how can they really lose? Like, this is too, I know Wardlow is the all-conquering hero and that's the point, but I just sort of feel like MJF is too clever a heel to fall on a banana skin in this situation.
It can't fail, because I was just about to say, is it as simple, or should it be as simple as MJF, like the F10, the legs of Sean Spears swing into MJF's face, he hits the F10, powerbomb for fun, gets MJF's limp hand, mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3, I'm in the match. That seems a bit easy for this, but at the same time, the fans would eat it up, so is it not a terrible thing to do? I don't think so. I agree with Hamflip. What you want to do for me is establish Wardlow so unbelievably dominant that if MJF finds a way to do a heat spot on him, that in itself will make him look stronger than anyone else who Wardlow's faced, and then he can MJF emerge with his heat and his credibility, even in clean defeat to Wardlow at the Pape. This is how I would book it as a result. Just make Wardlow look like an absolute killer. Get Spears. Make use of the cage stipulation, because everyone wants to see a bit of cage stuff. And they might complain.
You can't win this by escaping the cage, can you?
No, it's AEW.
Just double checking.
So he just rams him into the cage. The more flailing and slapstick the bumps, the better. Do the old pressed up against it, camera there, have some fun with it.
10 of them.
Yeah, well, 10 of them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You know, I'm counting 10. I don't know why I'm doing it, right?
Keep going.
And then powerbomb. Actually, I would save the 10 thing for the powerbomb. So do like 4 or 5. Maybe get the crowd to start thinking it's going to be 10, right? So they know how to count. They've been trained how to count because they're SEALs. Then do the powerbomb. 4, the magic number. There's 1, 2, 3. Does the awesome thing where he folds him over, drags him by the head, then does 4, then 5, then 6. I've seen this on fantasy book and threads on Reddit and Twitter. This is not my idea, but it's the best idea, so do it. 6, 7, 8, 9, and then an entire arena standing up going 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, right? Wardlow victory via TKO, right? So you don't have to do the overplayed, it would still be fun, 1, 2, 3 thing. You could have Sean Spears sell like he's dead, completely concussed, knocked out, whatever. MJF frantically realizing not only has he lost because he can't get up by TKO, but I'm trapped in the cage with Wardlow. And then everyone will realize, oh, hang on, MJF, Wardlow's finally got his hands on MJF, and then get it out of there somehow. Like a jump through the door, like climbing out the cage, something, right? One more fantasy book a note on this before I have to go downstairs and finish something off, right? Even though it's become less of a thing that feels comfortable with rumours of MJF's genuine unhappiness, right? Still play with the Bidden War for 2024 thing. I want to see MJF wear the same fit as Vince McMahon in the ref outfit with no sleeves.
Love that.
Makes the tight tits dance like Vince did that time when he was spending time coming back from the bridge.
When he just the flex on the ramp. That was just a horrible image.
I've also
image
seen
that.
Some tits pop like.
Yeah. I got a little bit of an idea and it's not complete. There is a door, isn't there, into this steel cage to get in, obviously. Yeah. Well, I in theory, we'll then,
teleport into it, mate.
I know, but I was going to say, do they get in and then lower it? It's been so bloody long, I can't remember. But
lower, yeah, but there's still a door.
Right, so I got a bit of an idea, and this actually, because I was like, oh, I haven't really got a finish in mind, but the TKO thing actually works pretty well here. So rather than having MJF stood in there whilst he's doing the blah, 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 he had a bit of an idea as we were talking there. How about, because it's effectively a handicap match early on, how about Wardlow's trying his best, but like you say, MJF's just being a bit of an annoyed dick, and Wardlow's like, I want to chin you, you prick, right? But he doesn't do that because he's not an idiot, right? If Babyface is a smart in AEW, right? But MJF realises, oh, bollocks, Shaw's in a bit of trouble here, so swift kick in the bollocks, that seemed to work pretty well last week, right? And then Sean gets a few chair shots in, and they're like, this is it, baby, like, maybe they even try a pinfall, but he even quick counts. But Wardlow kicks out, but he's buggered, basically. And MJF's like, well, let's go to the spot that worked so well last week. Let's get out the beautiful diamond ring. Sean Spears is carrying it for whatever reason. He goes, Sean, give us the diamond ring. Wardlow obviously used to just pop it in MJF's hand. Sean Spears, he's a bit of a, I love him, and in character this is, bit of a bellend, right? And he just goes to do the old, hey, throw him the beautiful diamond ring. That spills out of the ring. MJ's like, oh, you bloody idiot, what are you doing? Opens the door, goes out, Wardlow shuts the door, Sean Spears is trapped in there with him, and then you do the finish that you did. And MJF's just on the outside going, oh, I don't want to get back into that. And then he just...
That's just 1, 2, 3 on the side of the cage.
Calls the TKO or whatever like that, and he's just like, well, I think I might just live to fight another day, specifically Sunday. But yeah. The fact that we're fantasy booking all this stuff, and in all scenarios, Wardlow obviously wins, makes a lot of sense. But I can't wait for tonight, and particularly, obviously, that steel cage match. Let us know your thoughts, because we haven't even had time to talk about the whole Jericho Appreciation Society stuff. We'll talk about that more.
No big loss,
which is a bit not nice, but yeah,
we'll talk about anarchy in the arena. Is that what
on the preview?
Yeah,
indeed,
we'll talk about it on the preview for the pay per view later on this week. But let us know your thoughts ahead of Dynamite tonight on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Watch there, you can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
M Sidgwick.
And you can still buy his brilliant book, Becoming All Elite, The Rise of AEW, on Amazon right now. You can follow me on Twitter at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. Our NXT 2.0 review is available right now. And our review of this show will be in your feed tomorrow as soon as it is released, if you subscribe. But for now, this has been the AEW Dynamite Preview. My thanks to the Dudley Boys. Thank you for joining us. And we will see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.